Good morning. You're listening to More Talk Radio, KBOO FM. My name is Cecil Prescott, and I'll be joined with my co-host Celeste Carey. And if you are listening, you are tuned correctly. KBOO FM in Portland, that's 90.7, or in the Hood River is 91.9, and it is 100.7 in Corvallis, and via the World Wide Web, it's KBOO.FM. Today is Monday, January 10th. The year is 2011, and again, you are listening to More Talk Radio. We thank you for joining us this morning, and we hope that you will join us in our conversation. Joining us this morning is Priva Hangandu, who is a political scientist. He has served as a program officer for debt and public resource monitoring at the Jesuit Center for Theological Reflection in Zambia. He is currently studying in Wisconsin, Marquette, I believe. And he is working with Jubilee USA for a few months here in the United States. And thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. And Priva, you mentioned he's been traveling a lot the past few days and moving from the West Coast to the Midwest and back to the West Coast. So I thank you for it's about 8 o'clock our time, and I'm not sure what time frame you're on, but thank you for being here.
I'm right here in Portland at the moment. Thank you.
Great. Well, I thought we might begin by just sharing a little bit about you. You know, I mentioned briefly of your work in your country, Zambia, and you're a student here in Wisconsin right now. But I thought perhaps we could begin, if you could tell us a little in terms of personal narrative, in terms of who you are and how you became involved in the work you are in currently.
Thank you very much, Cecil. Well, as you've rightly pointed out, I come from Zambia, and I always love to, be realistic to this whole issue about, you know, my profession, what I'm currently doing as a political scientist, but also what I've been involved in the last couple of years, that is working on issues of international debt, but also local debt in Zambia. I think what gives me the initiative to begin with, but also the strength and the desire even to address issues of debt, is what I have gone through personally. That is, I have seen poverty, and I've seen the implications of, debt on poor people in Zambia, and actually in other African countries and even in Asia and in Latin America. Because what you see on paper, when one country gets into debt with another country, might look as something that, you know, is technical, but the implications of that on the ground are very different. You find it's a poor person that cannot afford three meals in a day, whose tax at the end of the year accumulates to paying, you know, to servicing a debt or a loan to another country, which might actually be in a better position and has no idea what where this money is coming from. So that is my personal story, that I'm coming from a background of struggle. I have gone through struggle myself. I've encountered people that are struggling in life. I've seen people lose lives because they couldn't go to a hospital 5 kilometers away or 2 miles away, because there was no hospital, but because they couldn't reach there, there was no road to link them up. And there was no road because their government could not put up a road there, but had to service the debt. So it's such implications, small things, but which make huge differences in people's lives, that have actually given me this desire to get into serious research about the causes, the root causes of the debt, and hoping that, you know, somehow with my engagement with policymakers and with the Zambian government and different governments, I'm making a difference. And that through my contribution to Jubilee Zambia and here in the United States right now with Jubilee Oregon, that, you know, we are linking our voices together to make that difference and to to send a message to our policymakers that, you know, what we decide in, you know, in the huge buildings in the you know, in Washington D.C., be it in the UK, it does have an impact, and you know, on the people on the ground. So that is what has given me this courage, and that's what has been my driving force the last couple of years when I have been engaged with the Jubilee movement.
Well, thank you for sharing that. I was wondering, as you began speaking and sharing your story, that for many of our listeners who are just completing their holidays, and people might be concerned about personal debts.
Yeah.
And it might be somewhat of a challenge for them to, for us to open our wallets and try to put a hand on what it means when we talk about debt that
right.
that nation owns
right.
owes and things
right.
such as that.
Right.
I was wondering if you could share a little bit in terms of perspective when we talk about it's in your country, when we speak about a debt, what type of debt did the country encounter and how
okay.
it impact people?
Yeah, okay. That's a very good question. Thank you very much, Cecil. When you talk about a debt, a national debt, there are two ways a country can be in debt, and those two ways could be explained further on in different ways. But there are two major ways that a country can fall into debt. One is what you call domestic debt, which means that a government seeks financial resources from the domestic banks. Okay? That has its own nuances. We could, you know, get deeper into that topic. You know, what does that mean for the local businesses, the small scale and medium enterprises, when a government, a state, monopolizes financial resources at the domestic level, and what implications of, you know, on poverty that has. But our interest here is with the second one, which we call international debt or external debt, where one government goes to another government or to an institution to seek financial assistance or even development assistance. And this doesn't have to be in terms of money, but it's always understood at the end of the day, serviced in terms of money. You could borrow from the United States. Zambia can borrow from the United States money, or they can borrow services. They can, you know, be given services, which at the end of the day they have to kind of account for in terms of, in monetary terms, repaying or servicing them in terms of monetary terms. So just to give you a concrete example, Zambia in 2004 had accumulated an external debt of 7.1 billion United States dollars. And this money was owed to the IMF, to the World Bank. And if Zambia owed this money to the IMF or the World Bank, then we call it multilateral debt. Mm-hmm. It's a multilateral kind of arrangement. Mm-hmm. But if Zambia owed a single country, an individual country, then you call it a bilateral arrangement. So that would have been a bilateral debt. So by the end of 2004, Zambia was in debt. It had $7.2 billion of debt. And it was spending something like $300 million every year trying to service those debts to different companies and different institutions and different countries. So that is what we talk about when we talk about debt. And that figure that I just gave you is the amount of money Zambia owed both prior to its independence and after independence. Part of that money was borrowed by the colonial masters, and it was inherited by the new state, by the new government, and had to be serviced by the new state.
And when was independence?
Zambia's independence was in 1964, on the 24th of October. So there are a lot of issues that come into the whole picture of debt, talking about debt, and why the Jubilee movements are trying to, you know, get governments to understand why some of these debts must be cancelled. It's because, you know, an example would be a country that borrowed money under a dictator, for instance. You know, why didn't the lender understand that this dictator is not going to use the money for the purposes of the people? Why did it go ahead and give them the money? Did they have responsible lending policy at home? And the people can say no to servicing that debt because it's an what we call an illegitimate debt.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of nuances that have to come into the picture when people discuss these issues of debt.
Yeah. Well, when we're speaking of the debt and just try to get an understanding of the impact of people, so, mm-hmm. $7.1 billion U.S.
Yep.
U.S. dollars,
yep.
And you said annually $300 million was paid.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming that by servicing that debt, that's money that could not be used elsewhere.
Right.
So money that was repaying IMF and World Bank could have been used for school, health, but not.
Right. What you're creating actually is a situation where a government is, having to meet competing needs, competing between social services at home, infrastructure development at home, and spending money to service a loan to a country that might actually not need that money. We are not saying that a country must not be held accountable to what it has voluntarily gone into, because these are legal tenders. People get into, governments get into loans voluntarily, and also they understand the legal implications most of the time. But we are saying there is a structural problem here. There is a structural problem in terms of the lender having a responsible lending policy to individual governments, but also the borrower also having a responsible borrowing policy. Those two things have to go hand in hand. They must always be understood together. Mm-hmm. So the problem is a structural one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But also, it's a problem of logic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? We know that our governments every year spend a lot of time and money trying to make budgets for the year. And a huge part of the budget usually is going to be about how much money they're going to give to a poor country. It doesn't make very good logic to be giving so much money and then receiving so much money from the same country. By the end of 2001, sub-Saharan African countries owed the international community something like $200 billion, United States dollars. And more than $200 billion was leaving sub-Saharan Africa, mm-hmm. For debt servicing. And African and Western countries are very busy every year planning how much they're going to give to these countries in terms of aid.
Right.
So there is a problem of logic there. Why should you be giving money to a country from whom we are receiving so much, and I think there's just something that must be addressed in terms of structures that we are not quite getting at as policymakers.
Right.
Yeah.
We're speaking this morning with Priva Hungadu, who has served as the program officer for debt issues with Jubilee Zambia. He's in the United States these months. He's studying at Marquette and will do some work with Jubilee USA in Washington, D.C. office.
Yeah, that's right.
So in our conversation, as you laid out the history about it, it occurred to me that this is certainly isn't an issue that only impacts Zambia, but in terms of many countries in the global south. I thought you might share with our audience about the Jubilee movement itself and why this movement developed and the impact that it seeks to have on the international scene.
Right. The Jubilee movement actually was a response to the debt problem, in the global south. It was an initiative of different interest groups, church groups, and civil society groups that had come to understand that countries in the global south were struggling to meet their ends at home. Okay, and it came slightly before the year 2000 because it has some biblical kind of background. The Jubilee year is a year when the people of in the Holy Land, the people of God in Israel, mm-hmm. The Jewish people understood it by, you know, it was a time when land was redistributed, mm-hmm. people with debt were forgiven, people were given a fresh understanding, and this came, you know, not very often.
Right.
And so everybody was given a fresh beginning. And so these people that came together, the church groups, the interest groups, the civil society organizations, were adopting this understanding and applying it on the debt situation that is, you know, currently a burden on the global south, and trying to get people in the West, policymakers, the creditors, to understand that, well, yes, some countries might have fallen into debt without knowing it. Some of them might have endorsed the process throughout. But there is need to understand that the people who are suffering the impacts and the implications of that debt are the people on the ground, people who are not in government, people who can't afford healthcare, people who can't afford to go to school, people who can't afford 3 meals in a day because their governments are seriously indebted and paying huge amounts of money every year trying to service the debts. But also, it's very important that we understand that once a country is trapped in a debt, it's a very serious problem. It's almost impossible to completely service a debt. Zambia, I like to give this example. I said Zambia had borrowed, we owed $7.1 billion by the end of 2008 and 2004, I beg your pardon. Mm-hmm. But we had only borrowed $5 billion.
Mm.
Okay? We had only borrowed $5 billion. And yet, we had accumulated a debt of $7.1 billion with interest. And we had serviced, we had paid back in total, from the time we started servicing the debt, $11 billion. Mm. And we still owed $7.1 billion. That defeats logic. And that can tell you that, well, this country is perpetually going to be servicing a debt. So this Jubilee movement was an understanding that these countries are actually trapped in a structure that they cannot get themselves out of.
Mm-hmm.
So it's probably making sense that with the understanding of this biblical concept of Jubilee, where land was redistributed, where people debts were forgiven, why don't we get the international community to understand this kind of situation that, you know, the global south is in, and give them a fresh beginning, whether they have been responsible for the debt or not, but they deserve a fresh beginning. They are addressing serious chronic issues of poverty, and they probably need some fresh beginning. And when we have given them a fresh beginning, mm-hmm. then we begin to address also the structures that are at the heart of this whole problem. What is causing them to get into debt?
Mm-hmm.
Is it what they need? Do they need borrowing, or maybe they need more of long-term solutions,
mm-hmm.
in terms of technical assistance, you know, in terms of helping them to boost their agricultural production, for instance, you know, move into manufacturing as opposed to depending so much on commodity export. So it goes beyond what people see on paper as, well, Zambia owes us so much, we're going to get so much from them. Mm-hmm. So there are all those small things that actually do make a lot of difference when you get to understand the structural problems around the issue of debt.
Yeah. Well, it occurs to me, as you talked about the structural issues around debt,
mm-hmm.
That it involves, I would think it involves more than the goodwill of lending institutions. So I don't suppose you would go up to the lending institutions and say the right thing to do is to cancel the debt.
Mm-hmm.
And I imagine that there's some sort of persuasion,
right.
That's part of it.
Yeah.
How are Jubilee encouraging partners to help persuade lending institutions to think differently of these debts? How do we convince them that it's the right thing to do?
Well, I think one way to do that is to be very practical about what's happening with these borrowers,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think it's just astounding to see the figures, even by the IMF, the World Bank, the United Nations, when they tell you, for instance, that one out of every five children who are born in Africa will die before the age of five, and the reason being that they cannot, there are no facilities for mothers, you know, to, you know, have their children checked up, you know, mm-hmm. before the age of five. That 729 women out of 100,000 died during childbirth because their government is servicing a debt with the United States or with the IMF or with the World Bank or Switzerland. So I think one of those points of persuasion is to merely bring to the table the real picture of what is happening in these countries that are spending so much money to service the debts. That in itself must be convincing enough on moral grounds, but also on principles of justice. I think Jubilee South, the Jubilee movement appeals very much to the principles of justice. It's mm-hmm. a matter of justice.
Okay.
Justice requires that if you borrow, you pay back. That is true. But you pay back not with criminal interest rates,
mm-hmm.
okay? There's an issue of interest rates. How much interest rates do these lending institutions slap on these borrowing countries?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes one country gets into debt with another country with an understanding that the interest rate is going to be 10% beginning after maybe 10 years. And all of a sudden, the lending country decides to push it up to 12%. That is criminal.
Yes.
You know, and it's not an issue of mercy. People are not asking for mercy only, although that could be part of the package. But actually, it's also a matter of justice, structural justice. How do the lending institutions understand, you know, poverty? And I think what is most amazing about this whole issue of debt is, you know, these countries and institutions that are owed, you know, that you know, are kind of the lending institutions mm-hmm. that are owed these huge amounts of money. They are the very institutions and countries with all this publicity in the media about addressing issues of poverty in Africa, in Latin America,
mm-hmm.
and that does not rhyme. You know, it doesn't mm-hmm. resonate with what is actually happening on the ground in terms of debt servicing and all these complicated matters. We talk about financial institutions
mm-hmm.
trying to get rid of poverty in the developing world. So, it's a question of logic. It's a question of justice. Mercy, maybe not, that's not the correct word to use, but it's a question of justice. Yeah.
We're speaking this morning with Priva Hangadu from Zambia. He's currently studying in Wisconsin and served as program officer for debt issues with Jubilee Zambia. We encourage those of you who would like to know more and speak with our guests to give us a call this morning and be a part of our morning conversation. Let me suggest to you that that Priva will speak this Wednesday at Westminster Presbyterian Church in Northeast Portland,
right.
The 16th in Northeast Hancock, and you will be there at 7 p.m., and that's open to the public,
mm-hmm.
and it's sponsored by Jubilee Oregon.
Right.
And Jubilee Oregon can be reached at jubileeoregon@gmail.com. Great organization. But come out this Wednesday at 7 p.m. to hear more about the work of Jubilee and previous presentations. Again, give us a call and be a part of our morning conversation. Let me remind you that at 9 is the Omo Variety Hour. David Bergson of Reader's Repertory Theater talked about the production of the play Bloody Ordinary. The movie moles discuss True Grit. And Peter Landon of Teamsters for a Democratic Union talks about the campaign to replace James Hoffa as Teamster president with Sandy Pope. At 10 here, Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Locus Focus, the guest is professor and author Paul Ehrlich, who discusses his new book, Humanity on a Tightrope, which stresses the importance of strengthening empathy and a sense of kinship in our society. And at 11 on Health and Healthcare Forum. We'll hear about a universal single-payer health care for Oregon residents from Mike Huntington of Physicians for a National Health Program. And at 11:30, feminist Cornelia Fine, author of Delusions of Gender, debunked scientific and popular claims that there are differences between the female and male brains. All of this here on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. But we'll continue our conversation with Priva Hangudu, who is with Jubilee Zambia and is working for the next few months with Jubilee USA, and he is in Oregon this week to discuss the Jubilee movement. I was wondering, before we go to our callers, if you can share what your hopes are for your time here in Oregon and what work you will be doing in Washington, D.C. in the coming months.
Let me just put things straight. Well, what I'm doing, first of all, here is working with Jubilee Oregon. Mm-hmm. And mainly it's just we are linking the voices on the issue of debt. Jubilee Oregon is developing a partnership with Jubilee Zambia. And so having worked with Jubilee Zambia, Jubilee Oregon thought it was, you know, appropriate and something that would be more realistic, more real to the people here, that a Zambian face is present when this is happening. So I'm around to kind of represent, you know, Jubilee Zambia in that sense, if you wish.
Uh-huh.
And also speaking to different people and different groups and students especially about issues of development and issues of how the debt issue comes in the whole question of development. Okay. So that's the whole idea that a Zambian face is present when all this is happening,
mm-hmm.
but also for educational purposes, I guess that from the point of view of experience and the point of view of having worked so much on issues of debt, both at the national level but also at the international level with different organizations, having sat in meetings with the IMF, the World Bank, and you know. Different lending institutions and countries to developing countries, what my experience has been in these negotiations, in these discussions,
mm-hmm.
and how do I see this whole thing unfolding in the next many years, and what the hopes for Jubilee organizations world over mm-hmm. are with regard to this work that we are doing right now. And I'm going to be working with Jubilee USA this summer. I'm not yet there, but I'm currently seriously studying political science at Marquette University in Wisconsin, which is my current preoccupation.
Okay. Yeah. Well, certainly after your studies, then you'll go to D.C. and
right.
do some work.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
We're speaking with Priva Hangudu from with Jubilee Zambia. We're going to take a short break here, and we will return. Let me remind you that our phone numbers are 503-231-8187. Give us a call and speak with our guests.
En el barrio La Cachimba se ha formado la corredera. En el barrio La Cachimba se ha formado la corredera. Allá fueron los bomberos con sus campanas, sus sirenas. Allí fueron los bomberos con sus campanas, sus sirenas. Ay, mamá, ¿qué pasó? Ay, mamá, ¿qué pasó? Thank you.
Thank you. And you are listening to More Talk Radio. Today is Monday, January 10th, 2011. My name is Cecil Prescott. I'm here with my co-host,
Celeste Carey. Good morning, all.
And we're speaking with Priva Hangadu from Zambia, who is with Jubilee Zambia. And he is in Portland this week doing some work with Jubilee Oregon. He will speak this Wednesday at Westminster Presbyterian Church at 7 p.m. Westminster Church is located at 16th and Northeast Hancock in Portland. And that is sponsored by Jubilee Oregon and is free and open to the public.
One of the things that I wanted to discuss as we were talking about the issue of loans and the conditions and the financial situations that countries find themselves in when they are caught in high debt in, situations is what kinds of conditions, what kinds of policies have been established both in terms of the borrower and the lender's governments to regulate these loans. I remember listening and hearing you saying if a company raises, a lending country raises the interest rate, that can cause undue burden on the borrowing country. But I also want to talk about governments who may not be as, well, just be blunt, proficient in handling their finances, and so they incur debt unresponsibly.
Thank you very much. I think it's a very good question, and it's one of the issues that I've worked on seriously with the government in Zambia back home. What we did as Jubilee Zambia was we actually did manage to get a lot of our debt canceled. So one of the tasks that we gave ourselves was that having seen our debt written off by 86%, so what next? Okay, so what we did was we took a very serious study of the national constitution, and we realized that there were a lot of gaps in the national constitution in terms of loan contraction. And so we took the task, the government to task, we took the parliament to task, and started pushing for legal structures in the constitutions that would bind the Zambian government to borrow in a manner that is sustainable and responsible. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we said was we actually produced a legal proposal ourselves. We hired lawyers, people that are conversant with all these legal terminologies, and we sat together with our knowledge about the economic functioning of a government and our concerns about the debt. So we sat together and we came up with a legal framework which we proposed, and we are lucky that at that time Zambia was going through a process of a constitution-making process because we were still operating under a constitution that we inherited from our colonial masters with a few amendments, of course. So we made some proposals, for instance, one of them being that before government considers borrowing money from another institution or from another country, they consult with parliament.
Yes.
That they put in place committees within parliament that are going to advise the Ministry of Finance before they get to a point of acquiring a new loan, as opposed to somebody sitting in an office in Washington, D.C. in a meeting, and then there's another person tells them, hey, we could give you so much money if you did ABCD, and then they sign up a loan just there, which has very, very binding implications for the next 40, 50 years of that country. Mm-hmm. So that is the first responsibility of every individual country. Not only, we know that debt is not a problem of the developing countries alone. The United States has a lot of debt with China. We know that. Mm-hmm. Okay, so even developed countries. So what we need in place is a very good local domestic legal mechanism that guides individual countries in the process of loan contraction. That is a given. And we know of countries that have done it so well and they have managed to maintain their levels of debt. One of those countries is, Uganda has it. Mm-hmm. Okay, even if we know that they've been having some problems also, but they have that framework. And they've managed to maintain their levels of debt. Ghana has it, one of the other African countries. And Zambia is in the process of doing that. The question has been sent to the referendum, meaning people are going to vote on whether this should be the case or not. So there is a lot of hope from that perspective. But also we know that that is a non-starter if there is no reciprocal measures put on the other end in terms of responsible lending. We cannot maintain such structures if the lenders themselves do not realize that they need to put in place proper lending mechanisms, assess the situation of the country that they're giving money to. Are we giving money to a dictator who's going to pocket the money or put it in a private account in a foreign country, or we are going to somebody who's going to responsibly use the money for the benefit of the people? Mm-hmm. And if a lender gives money to somebody they know is going to, we have structures even in the United Nations. From being a political scientist and having done a bit of international law, I know that if one country does an act to another country that encourages that country to abuse the rights of the people, you know, the people at home, then the country that does the first act can be held responsible under international law for, you know, for that action that they would have done to. They are passively committing an abuse of human rights in that country that is receiving the act. Mm-hmm. So one practical example is the United States and the dictator of the then Zaire, which is now the Democratic Republic of Congo, mm-hmm. that a lot of money was given to him during the Cold War because they wanted allies with, you know, mm-hmm. such countries. And we know that everybody in Africa and elsewhere knows that Mobutu is one of the worst dictators that has ever lived on the African soil. And I think that was not strange to the American government, but they continued giving him money. And the people that are servicing that money, that loan, is not Mobutu or his family.
Right, it's the citizens.
It's the citizens of the Democratic Republic mm-hmm. of Congo. And that's why we are calling for cancellation of such loans. And it's a very unjust way of proceeding. So we need responsibility on both ends. Yeah.
This is a good moment to take a short break and get to the phone call that we have.
Good morning, Vernon.
Good morning, Vernon. Thanks for joining.
Good morning. Good morning. And I'd like to welcome our guest to America.
Thank you very much.
It's wonderful to have you here. It's good to hear a Zambian voice.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
I spent some time in Zambia in the 90s and was very moved by your country.
Thanks.
And I do believe that the Jubilee is a very important. We need to have a Jubilee. There's so many of us in debt, and so much of the world in debt, and so few who are benefiting from that. What I wonder is, why do we continually beg the people who have abused us through usury to be kinder to us, rather than simply saying, "Look, we're all in debt. It's time for a Jubilee. Sound the trumpet."
Right, right.
Why don't we, the indebted, declare the Jubilee and simply stop paying the users?
That's a good question.
Right.
I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you. Actually, in 1983, the then president of Zambia, President Kaunda, refused mm-hmm. to service the debt. Mm-hmm. He just said, "Look, I cannot continue giving so much money to debt servicing, because I can't, you know, meet the needs of the people here in Zambia." And what had actually happened was, if you remember very well, in the early 1970s, there was a huge problem of the oil prices going up,
right.
One mm-hmm. of the very high prices that were recorded of oil. But Zambia being a commodity exporter, you know, copper mainly, and the copper prices went down so drastically that it's just incredible that Zambia could not earn the money to continue servicing the debt, but also to acquire the oil that it needed, you know. So President Kaunda then said, "I'm not going to service the debt." And he got in trouble with the IMF, and he received a number of sanctions and, you know, stuff like that. And so it is true that Jubilee can be that radical about, you know, illegitimate debt, like the example that I gave of President Mobutu Sese Seko. I think the country should simply say we cannot service this debt. We cannot go ahead with this debt. But there are other kinds of debt that need more negotiation and persuasion in terms of should we continue servicing this debt given the situation that people on the ground are suffering and you know, the people that are actually bearing the brunt of this are not the government people who have accounts overseas, but the person that cannot go to school, children in the village that cannot cross the river to go to school, or, you know, a teacher that cannot stand up to teach because they have no salary or they have not been paid for months. So those are the people that are suffering, and they are the people that need this kind of understanding as we negotiate and, you know, enter these persuasions about whether to pay or not to pay the debt. So thank you. That's a very good question. But we have to be radical, but at the same time also realize that we need to dialogue.
So in other words, just to be really clear about this, what we're saying is it's a delicate balance. If you refuse to service the debt, what can happen is any of the resources you need for your own product production could be limited. So you're looking for oil to enhance copper production, copper mining, you know, plus, man, you know, the refining of it. If you don't service the debt, there's a chance that you may not get the oil or any other resources you need to import. Is that the case?
Well, first of all, when you get into a debt, it's a very legal kind of thing, and international law requires that you pay. Okay.
But does not international law recognize that this is a form of usury?
Well, and that's why we are talking about responsible lending and responsible borrowing. We need to work on the structures of what guides countries as they seek financial assistance from other countries and what guides the lenders as they give assistance. So it has to be addressed in a more systematic way than, you know, like a reactive situation.
Right.
This country is suffering, people are dying, so you have to... We are aware of the legal obligations that countries get themselves into when they're entering into these debts. But we are also aware that there's a lot of structural abuse in the process. One other issue that we've not brought out is the issue of voucher funds, for instance. Voucher funds are companies and organizations that can buy a debt from a creditor and, you know, claim full ownership of that debt and, you know, ask the other country, the debtor, to pay in full, even if that debt was going to be cancelled, illegitimate or legitimate, and even impose new conditions on the debt. You know, interest rates, you know, and levels, years of maturity, and all those conditions. So they take ownership of the debt and they can impose new conditions on whatever they want of that debt and of that country. So there are all those things that need legal kind of addressing. We know of countries like the United Kingdom. The United Kingdoms have ruled against voucher funds. And we are calling for many other countries in the developed world to realize that this is a form of structural injustice, okay, that needs to be addressed as well.
After we take our next caller, perhaps you can address in some of the pressure that we might be able to place on the lending institution, IMF, World Bank, and those of us in the so-called first world, what type of pressure we can do.
Right.
But we have a caller who's been waiting. Joanne, good morning.
Yes, good morning. I appreciate this program. I'm going to put this out. You may not want to look at it, but I'm wondering how the United States, owing so much money, to China, so much debt, how we get away with that, and I'd like us to clean it up. Thank you.
Thank you, Joanne.
I go ahead. Okay. That's, again, an American problem. It's a local debt for America. America owes trillions of dollars to China. It's a Chinese problem because China constricts its consumption capacity of its citizens, and they have accumulated dollars, billions and billions of dollars, and they have nothing to do with them. Mm-hmm. America has lots to do with that, and so they borrow it. Okay, we have a deficit here in America in terms of our budget, and where do we get the money? China.
Right.
So that is a problem, and I think... It's it's a very delicate issue, okay, to address for the American. I'm not an American,
right.
But to address
it's
it as an outsider for Americans is very difficult. But I think America needs to understand that they have to scale down on a number of things. You know, we are a consumerist society.
Certainly.
You know, we consume so much more than any other country in the world. And that's the reason we are borrowing, because we want to consume more and more. And
yeah.
China cannot consume, so they will give us their, you know, their room and space for consumption. And then we take it and we ride on that. So
right.
I think Americans have to address that with their own lawmakers.
Certainly.
Thanks, sure.
So to get back in the last few minutes of our program, you know, we mentioned the debt that the governments owe and the impact on the people. One thing that we've mentioned was lending institutions.
Right.
And they, for many of us, they're a name floating in the sky. So what type of influence in terms of affecting policies can we have with like World Bank and the IMF?
Right,
what type of pressures can we put on those institutions to create a more just economic world?
Okay. I think, first of all, the first step is to educate ourselves about the operations of the IMF and the World Bank to get to understand what these institutions are all about, what they were meant to do when they were created, and what they are now doing as opposed to what they are meant to do when they were created. And there's a huge difference. You'll notice that there's a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
They have outlived, some people say they have outlived their usefulness. I'm sorry to say that, but I don't buy into that.
Mm-hmm.
They might not have. But we know that there's a lot of structural problems with the IMF and the World Bank vis-a-vis their lending policies and their interaction with developing countries. One example is this. In the 1990s and late 1990s leading into 2000 up to 2004, when Zambia was struggling with that huge debt of $7.1 billion, the IMF came in and said, and the World Bank, if you want us to forgive the part of the debt that you owe us, you're going to follow A, B, C, D. You're going to privatize your economy. You're going to let go of all the institutions that you're financing as a government. You're going to scale down on the employment of teachers and build up so much of a domestic stock in terms of foreign exchange. You're going to freeze the wages to the civil service. And these are all decisions that are made in a building in Washington, completely blind to the situation on the ground.
Yes.
Even if there's an office in Zambia, but that does not resonate with what is happening on the ground. What you need is not to freeze the wage of a Zambian teacher who earns less than $300 or $200 at the end of the month, whatever it is, who is already struggling even to meet their own end, their own needs. They're struggling to get their children in school. They're struggling to get medical health care. And you come in and say you're going to freeze their wages for the next 5 years before they can be accepted, or given a pass for debt cancellation. It's such policies that the IMF needs, the IMF and the World Bank and many other, you know, international lending institutions need to be very sensitive with. They need to be more on the ground to know what is happening on the ground before they impose those conditionalities.
Well, can I play devil's advocate here
right,
for a moment?
Right.
When you speak in terms of the World Bank and IMF,
mm-hmm.
Putting in these conditions and asking for you to privatize certain elements, this is not done in a vacuum. They have some understanding that your country is undergoing privation. So, you know, my question is, how do you bluntly put it on the table that basically what you're telling us to do is to give away our resources, cripple our future generation with inadequate education,
yeah.
and privatize some of our very basic necessities like water and land rights.
Right. One of my favorite authors is an Indian teaching in the United States called Amartya Sen.
Mm-hmm.
A shoe that fits you might not fit me. Okay. A solution that works in the United States does not necessarily work in Zambia. So privatization might be a good economic instrument
for some other countries.
They, it might be good, actually, It might be good for every other country, but the process of privatization matters.
Yes.
Okay? What you do to privatize matters. When you come to tell the Zambian economy to privatize, this is an economy that has run since independence on, you know, supporting certain institutions by the government, and then today you come immediately, you privatize overnight.
Yes.
What happens to the hospital that was linked to the mine? Mm-hmm. What happens to the school that was linked to the mine?
What happens to the local economy?
Exactly.
Yes.
So what happens to all these dependent institutions on the major thing that you are privatizing? And the new owner is not interested in running a school. They're not interested in running a hospital. They're interested in extracting the copper from the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what have you done to, what have you done to the education institutions? What have you done to the, to the health institutions? There are all those factors which the IMF, I think, get so blind to, and they need to understand.
We're speaking this morning with Priva Hangadu, who is with Jubilee Zambia. He will speak this Wednesday at Westminster Presbyterian Church at 7 p.m., sponsored by Jubilee USA. I encourage those of you who are able to come and be a part of that conversation to hear the work of Jubilee Oregon, Jubilee USA, and the movement to cancel the debt. We want to encourage those of you who would like more information, you may contact Jubilee Oregon at jubileeoregon@gmail.com. You can also check them out on their website and learn more about the issues this morning. Thank you, Priva, for coming and sharing with us this morning.
The pleasure's mine.
Yes, and I also want to encourage people to check out the website Blog the Debt. You can find this at typepad.com and then /blog. And what that will do is help you look at all of the countries within the African continent, and especially Zambia and Zambia's neighbors, and find out how the debt is affecting them, what is being done, and get some personal views from the ground level as to how we can both be effective partners and what kinds of challenges are being faced by the debtor countries.
Stay tuned for the OMO Variety Hour. This has been More Talk Radio. My name is Cecil Prescott.
I'm Celeste Carey.